Thank you, Femi. So joining us now is Philip Blom. He's a historian, author, and a broadcaster, and I want to share with you his most recent book. It's called The Vertigo Years, Change and Culture in the West, 1900 to 1914. It's actually a fascinating book. I've got it right here in the studio with me. Philip Blom, thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me, John.
You know, there have been a lot of great and well-received and widely read stories about the events leading up to World War I. John Keegan, Barbara Tuchman, of course, The Guns of August. But this book takes a different view. It really focuses on those 14 years before the guns rang out across Europe and the lights went out all over the continent, as they say. It's a fascinating read, and I was really struck by how much change on so many different levels was going on at the beginning of the century, and nobody really understood where things were headed. Describe the feeling as a historian of sort of immersing yourself in this swirl of chaos.
Well, it's a fascinating feeling because you find new things all the time. The basic idea was that, you know, one always says that there was the good old days, the Edwardian time when everything was still intact and solid, when people still knew how to live, and then came the First World War, and then modernity happened, bang. And I'm trying to turn the clock back a little bit and say, well, let's look at the years before the war, and let's look at them without knowing that the war will happen, because a lot of these histories are written from a perspective of, now let's look what contributed to the outbreak of the war. But the fact is, you can't look at a time like that. No time knows where it will lead. Before 9/11, we didn't know that 9/11 would happen, and right. We were all grown up and we were all there. We can't look at the 90s just from the perspective of what would make 9/11.
But the perspective of this book really is that suddenly World War I doesn't look like a step forward into some brutal industrial age, but in fact becomes a step back from fear of all the changes that were taking place, women's rights, the technological changes that were taking place, the sort of wipeout of the Victorian era in almost one fell swoop. It was Europe and the West's fear of change that motivated World War I.
I think that's a very fair comment. I think, you know, vertigo is a sensation that you can happen when you're on a ride or so. And it's on the one hand very exciting, and on the other hand, you really get afraid. And I think that sort of double emotion was very prevalent at the time. And yes, there were people who were very concerned, who wanted to turn the clock back, who wanted to go back into the 19th century, while others really wanted to go headlong ahead. And that was a big tension that I think may have contributed to this cataclysmic violence. But I think it's also necessary or very important to see that nothing about this war was necessary. There were other crises before 1914 that were all resolved by diplomacy, and I think this crisis could just as well have been resolved. We might have still had a war, but I think it's very important to look at history and not to think that things happen necessarily.
And that it's not necessarily inevitable. Well, there's so much to talk about here. Women's rights, sexual mores were being challenged at the time. Focus for a minute on a couple of stories from the chapter about speed. The ability of cars to go in excess of, hey, 20 miles an hour was viewed as a frightening cultural phenomenon by intellectuals and, popular historians alike. A couple of stories, please.
Well, first of all, yes, 20 miles an hour, but there were already experimental trains that went in excess of 160 miles an hour. So I think, you know, that speed was real. But just imagine how that speed transformed people's lives. First of all, at your workspace, you could no longer, the factories were becoming more and more rationalized. There was an American called Mr. Taylor who looked after all of that. There was, in your everyday life, things just went so much quicker. In an office, people now got cables and got phone calls, where before that their fathers or their seniors were still written letters and waited a week for the news to come back. But people could also go on holiday for the first time because there were trains to take them far away. Seaside holidays came about. They could go to the movies, and millions of people went to the movies, and they saw stories told in a different way. They saw a world that was really alive with light, but with movement, but also they learned about things like cuts and speeding up an image. That, of course, these things are, we take them for granted when we go to the movies, but then it was really revelatory to people to see that, you know, you could do this with the world.
Well, you have the discourse of cinema replacing that of theater and other forms of entertainment, but then not completely replacing, joining, as we've seen with technological phenomena that are going on right in our era now. Bicycles were viewed as frightening because women would, you know, maybe be motivated not to wear skirts as often, right?
Well, they made them independent, and I think the transformation of the role of women was really tremendous. Women, of course, started to work. They had to work in the factories. People couldn't make one pay work. They both had to work. But they then also had fewer children. And bizarrely enough, you find book after tract of men saying, are we less masculine? Are we less virile because we are having fewer children? It didn't seem to have occurred to them that that's a decision a couple makes together. But women took a different stance in society. There were feminists, there were the suffragettes in Britain who were fighting for the vote, but there were also feminists in Europe, which are not often so often looked at, who were really very radical, who brought forward views and arguments that really only resurfaced in the 1970s about the fact that we have to really take a completely new look at society and at sexual relations between people. But also, I think this was, many men perceived this as threatening.
Oh, the language of you know, opposition to women is really, really striking in the some of the citations that you list here. Before we go, and you know, we could talk for a half hour about this at least. Do you think these are the vertigo years of the 21st century? And even though it's impossible to know, do you think we're headed for something like World War I?
Well, I wouldn't want to speculate, and wouldn't that be a terrible thought? But I think, you know, first of all, I think it may just be possible to learn out of history. And while the 20th century was certainly the most terrible of centuries, it was also one of the greatest social progress. There are many elements that connect us to the vertigo years of the 1900s. The uncertainty, the open future, the power of the media, of mass society, all things that came in back then. But I think there's also one big difference, and I think here we have to take a long, hard look at ourselves. The vertigo years were a time with a great future, that people hoped for the future, people had utopias. We have used up all utopias, from socialism to free love and the free market. We think that to us the future can only bring bad things, can only bring threats, and I think it's very difficult to go ahead if you think like that.
Wow. Well, it's a great takeaway. The Vertigo Years is Philip Blom's book. He's a historian, author, and broadcaster. The Vertigo Years, Change in Culture in the West, 1900 to 1914. How's our vertigo here in the 21st century? Thank you, Philip.
Thank you, John.
So let's talk about 10 years ago. That was the Columbine High School shooting in Littleton, Colorado. What do you think of that story? What's the takeaway 10 years later? 877-8-MY-TAKE, or send us an email to mytake@thetakeaway.org. If you missed anything on the program, we're always here on The Takeaway. Take our podcast to go. You can subscribe at thetakeaway.org or iTunes. I'm John Huckenberry. This is The Takeaway.